industry was not interested in a very theoretical degree. They wanted a more applied kind of a work. But the main problem was that mostly a lot of the smaller universities saw and colleges saw computer science as what we called a cash cow, attracted a lot of students, and so they thought, well, we just offer a few programming courses and then give them a degree in computer science, and doesn't require a whole lot of resources, and don't need many faculty members to do that. So, because you can get people who know how to program and come in and teach programming, which is not really computer science. I guess programming is to computer science something like, arithmetic is to mathematics.
Okay. You know,
you may call it arithmetic mathematics, but to a mathematician, it really isn't. And everybody should know arithmetic. And programming maybe is a little more higher level than that as far as the relationship to computer science. But a lot of people can program, and there's no reason, you know, that everybody shouldn't know a little bit about programming. And in some sense, I think in a lot of places, a lot of universities, they do. But it was these very weak programs, I guess I would call them, just programming oriented, that were popping up, and universities were, and smaller schools were putting them in, and you know, the degree, the diploma said computer science, just like those from legitimate computer science programs. So that's why there was some interest in forming accreditation.
So at the beginning, and early, not just at Clemson, but in general, from my research, I have learned that, you know, in the beginning, it was a pretty evenly distributed field as far as men and women, and at some point, that changes. Did you notice that, or do you have anything you could speak to about that?
I was just trying to think. I don't remember it ever being the case that we had a reasonable number of women in our classes or as computer science majors. But certainly nationally, that it was attractive at first. Because it was so new. And at some point, there's been a huge amount of research into this question. And so I was not involved in any of that research, but I've heard it discussed. And you know, once computer science kind of got associated with math and with science, then it I think, especially at the high school level, became, you know, it's pretty well established that middle school and high school is where, unfortunately, female students get turned off to science and math. So it's not just in computer science. It's certainly engineering has always had a similar problem. But I can't say that we actually noticed it, because mostly by the time we started really having a lot of of students, which is like 82 or 83, it was already noticeable that, I mean, most there were not a lot of female students in the class, or not even half, or close to it.
I just wanted to ask if you, like, from a Clemson perspective, if that was something we saw here, or if it was not necessarily the case here. It sounds like it was always kind of not a program that a lot of women were in.
No, it's pretty much all along. It's.
And it's almost not fair to ask that question because women weren't admitted to Clemson until 55.
So yeah.
Our numbers are always going to be a little bit weird in the...
But I think they're currently... Enrollment is
it's a lot different now.
Over half, right, or something?
I believe so. I think it's a little more even.
A little bit. Yeah. It's roughly even. So.
So, you were involved when the PhD program was being formed, correct?
Yes.
Can you tell me about that process?
Well, the basic process was very similar to getting, you know, we didn't have when we formed the computer science department, we didn't have a program. We didn't have a computer science program. The existing computer option in mathematics was still in existence, and we taught basically the courses for that option. But then we had to develop proposals for the degree programs, and we did a bachelor and master's basically at the same time, and you know that's an established process, just like any other new degree program at Clemson. You have to propose it, you have to get it approved on locally, and then you have to write a proposal to the Commission on Higher Education, the state. And they have to give it final approval. So the PhD program was much the same, except it was a little more difficult. The state is much more reluctant to approve PhD programs because PhD programs are generally, are on paper at least, they don't pay for themselves. It's the research that's brought in that basically pays for the PhD and to some extent master's as well, because you know a lot of graduate students have an assistantship and their tuition is paid through various sources, unlike undergraduates who actually pay real money to attend. So we worked on that and for quite a while, and probably the main reason we got it is that we still had only five or six faculty members, but three of them in particular were very successful in getting a very large grant contract from the. I forget, some branch of the military.
The Defense Department?
Yes, the Defense Department. It's through the Department of Defense, yeah. And that brought in quite a bit of money. And so our research achievement without even having a PhD program was pretty impressive. And that was the primary reason that there wasn't any basis for objections from others. And I remember I was at the meeting when the board met and we had to present it. And of course there were people there from USC and the other universities as well. And I forget whether it's the provost, I think it was the provost at USC was basically said, you know, with with that, this kind of research money, you certainly deserve a PhD program. So that I was.
Also, even your rival is.
Yeah, in a sense.
Voting
yeah.
for.
Yeah.
Kind of going backwards a little bit, when you're trying to create a computer science department that's coming out of an existing mathematics department, was there pushback on that decision? And
yes. That decision, that's an organizational decision, and the university basically has the ability to do almost anything it wants in terms of what are the colleges that you have, what are the departments you have, and that sort of thing. So there was some, a little bit of pushback, or not pushback, I guess, but some decision as to who was going to be in the new department, who were the faculty going to be, because all the faculty were existing faculty of mathematical sciences, and the choice was strictly up, pretty much up to the faculty members. The dean did have some say as far as had to approve whoever was going to move to the new department. But the formation of the department was basically just a presidential decision. Getting the program was a different matter, and there was some, there was certainly some objection to that on campus.
Like what?
Well, the other sciences, computer science was so new, and a lot of people thought that it wasn't a well-formed enough discipline, that it was probably going to fade away and be absorbed maybe just into other sciences. And so they thought it was maybe premature, or they thought they would probably lose some turf because of it, or it'd be, you know, if the university tried to support another program, then that money's got to come from somewhere. The state doesn't give you any more money for new programs. So there were some resource issues that came up. And there weren't a lot of, there were some objections and votes against it. I remember voting. The process in most universities, and same here, is if you're going to have a new program, it has to be proposed by some group, like a department, and then it goes up to the college level curriculum committee. And there were one or two votes against it at the college level. So, fortunately, it was not, mathematical sciences didn't object to it. So that helped a lot. and once it got, I don't recall any serious problems at the university level. If the college approves it, college level, which at that point was the College of Sciences, similar to the current College of Science, although there was an intermediate period when science was in combined with engineering. it eventually got approved, and certainly, you know, once it got to the provost level, that they were already supporting it. So.
Mm-hmm. So what have you done since leaving Clemson?
Leaving Clemson? Mm-hmm. Well, let's see, after I retired, I pretty much did nothing for a year, trying to decide what I wanted to do when I grew up. And because I was 62 then, so. And so I decided it would be interesting to spend some time in a different country. And I had some kind of standing invitations from a couple of European universities that if I ever wanted to come, you know, part on for a year or something. But then I happened to, just happenstance, I was, at the time I was, I think I was still, there was a group of Southeastern universities that had an education conference every year. And I was the chair of the steering committee for that for several years. And I think this was still the time. The conference that year was at the University of Georgia. So I went down there and just happened to sit at lunch with a gentleman who was the dean of information systems at a new university in the UAE, United Arab Emirates, a university for women, for Emirati women. And he was telling me about, you know, what they were trying to accomplish and all of that. And so basically offered me a position if I was, he didn't actually offer me a position because I didn't express a lot of, I thought it was interesting. But after I got back home, I started thinking, well, if you're going to do something different, why don't you do something really different? So long story too long. I did contact him and got an offer position and accepted it. And I went there and stayed for 3 years. And actually, I was the dean there the last year I was there. And it was a wonderful experience.
Can you tell me a little bit more about that experience? It sounds really interesting.
Well, I mean, the program was called Information Systems, but it was a little more on the computer science side than, it was not a real information systems as it's come to be known now, program. But basically it was very similar. You know, we taught this, a lot of the same courses that we have in the program here. The it wasn't the first computing program in the Emirates. They had the university, UAE University, United Arab Emirates University, basically had both men and women in a computing program. But traditionally the way education works there is it's separate. So you have the same program, but either they take courses at different times, or sometimes in some cases there's a partition down the middle of the classroom and the females sit on one side and the males on the other. So or boys and girls, as they call them. They don't call them men and women. They call them boys and still call them boys and girls, even until they've graduated from college. So, but it was just all around a very good experience. It just illustrated so clearly that the impression that we have from afar is quite a bit different from the way things really are.
How so?
And, well, in many ways. I mean, it's their culture, it's their way of doing things. That doesn't mean, you know, certainly, for example, the restrictions on females, which were changing at the time, but still, you know, that, but both males and females, for that matter, have a certain way they dress and outfit, and they all do that. And interesting things were some of our students they were a little reluctant to tell me a lot about family, but they told the female faculty members, and then the females, of course, would pass it on me. But there were certain things like the wearing the official, the overgarment, the abaya, they called it, which is a black robe, but often fairly fancy trimmings and everything. But they would things like at what age the young women were supposed to start wearing the abaya. Because young kids didn't have to do it, but and it was quite often the mother who insisted that the young woman start wearing before the father. I mean, the father would say, oh, she's young, let her do what she wants. The mother, she is an Emirati woman, young woman, she will follow our customs. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we tend to think, and I did too, I mean, that they were all oppressed and they didn't want to do all of these things. And many of them didn't want to do at least a lot of this, certainly the way they were restricted. I mean, the custom, young women couldn't do anything by themselves. They had to have a male relative with them, either a brother or a father. When I came, they could legally drive, but almost none of them did. But 3 years later, when I left, I would guess that probably 40 to 50% of our female students actually did drive themselves to the campus.
When exactly were you there?
This was 2000, 2001 to 2004.
Okay.
In fact, 9/11, 2001 happened. That was the September after I arrived there in August. So
immediately.
That was kind of shook things up a bit. But
what was that like, witnessing that from abroad?
Weird. Very, very strange. You know, we saw the TV of the Twin Towers and all of that, and it was sort of like it was a movie, or just of course, and you know, we didn't know anything about any more about it than what everybody here did. So, but it wasn't being in the Emirates is quite different from Saudi Arabia, for example.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, so the Emirates things are very open there. Things are much more open in Saudi now too. I've been over the years since I left there. I've been to Saudi probably 6 or 7 times. And things are getting better there as well, but they're still not any. It's not nearly as open as the Emirates.
So were you working in Saudi, or?
It was. I chaired a couple of accreditation visits there, and I've worked, consulted with some universities who were trying to get their programs accredited.
Okay. So after coming back in 2004, did you continue working, or were you...
After I got back, no. No, my parents were needing, they were getting older and needed help, so I probably would have stayed at least another year or two, but I needed to come back to help them. So, I haven't worked. I haven't had a day job since then. I haven't taught. You know, I've had the opportunity to teach even here at Clemson, but get used to being able to do whatever I want to do when I want to do it. And if you are going to teach a course, then that's kind of 3 or 4 month commitment that I don't have total freedom anytime. You know, if I could have taught a course in 2 weeks or something, I might have been interested in that, but
yeah, don't blame you.
I was still doing a lot professionally and a lot of volunteer work. So, all
right. Well, that is all the questions I have, but I did want to ask, is there anything that we didn't touch on that you would like to speak on before we wrap up?
Oh, not sure. I think Mark's done an amazing job of putting stuff, issues and events down on paper. And it's interesting to, you know, the fact that we're able to do this and make the record because things are new enough and we have people who are around at the beginning. But we were very lucky. The hardest thing to do early on, even through most of the 80s, was to find good qualified faculty members. And of course Clemson was undergoing a transition at that point as well. And Clemson, when I came here in 75, teaching was the main job of a faculty member. And there's some research expectation, but not a lot. And there were plenty of longtime faculty members who basically were very good teachers, and they taught a fairly heavy teaching load, and they didn't do much research. So most of the new faculty members, PhDs in computer science, there were not a lot of PhDs in computer science still. I mean, most of the older faculty members got a PhD in something else, because there wasn't any computer science when they got their PhDs. Mm-hmm. But their programs were growing so rapidly everywhere that there were, you know, any PhD graduate from any decent university would basically get a job offer from everywhere they went and did an interview, because it was just very hard to get good faculty members. So we were fortunate, and there were times when I can remember times when in July, when we didn't have enough faculty members to teach the courses that we already had a room full of students registered for. But somehow we managed to find people at the last minute who could fill in, and we muddled along. But it was just a constant effort to try to build a good faculty, and we were very fortunate to get good teachers and eventually a few faculty members who started doing good research or who were doing good research when they came. And that helped develop to support the graduate programs, which were needed, especially the PhD program. It was essential. And so it was an interesting 14 years that I was the department chair. And we accomplished a lot. I think we set a good base. And since then, now School of Computing has really is really turned out to be a very fine academic unit. It's not just a department anymore, but it's the School of Computing has done very, very well.
Did you ever think at the beginning that the department would become, like you said, its own school?
Well, there was some discussion of that toward the end, even of my term as department head. It was then. That was before they changed to department chairs. So there was a little bit of discussion, but it was pretty preliminary. We knew that we still had to develop further, and when I stepped down as chair, it was also difficult to find the kind of person, the kind of qualifications and accomplishments that were needed to take the department to the next level. And that, I forget, took about 3 years or 4 years, I think, where we just had interim department chairs. So it was a great experience, and I'm very pleased at the way it all turned out.